Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 8, Text Number 17. Puranena Vrajapate. Puranena Vrajapate. Sarvo dasyupiditi pidita. Sarvo dasyupidita. Arajakke rakshyamana. Arajakke rakshyamana. Jigyur dashun samedhita. Jigyur dashun samedhita. Puranena vrajapate. Sarvo dasyupidita. Arajakke rakshyamana. Jigyur dashun samedhita. Vaishnavis. Okay. Pura.
Formally.
Anena. By Krishna. Vrajapate. O king of Vraja. Sarva. Those who were honest. Dasyupidita. Being disturbed by rogues and thieves. Arajake. When there was an irregular government. Rakshamana. Were protected. Jigyu conquered. Dasyun, the rogues and thieves. Samedita flourished. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to protect the people and enable them to flourish. And he curbed the rogues and thieves. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Indra is the king of the universe. Demons, thieves, and rogues always disturb Indra. Indradi Vyakulam Lokam. But when Indradis, the enemies of Indra, become prominent, Krishna appears. Krishnas tu Bhagavan Swayam, Indradi Vyakulam Lokam, Ridayanti Yuge Yuge, Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 3rd Chapter, Text 28. Okay, I'm also going to read the next text, which does not have a purport, but is related to this text and purport and what I'm going to speak about, so I'll just read that too. Ya etasmin mahabhaga pritim korvanti manava narayo bibhyabhyan etan vishnu pakshan ivashura. Translation. Demons, asuras, cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate. Because such persons are very much affectionate toward Krishna, they cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa, or by the internal enemies, the senses. Om Aginatamaram Dashajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapidam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakaram Ayam Dirati Swapadantikam. So this is Garga Muni speaking. He was he's the family priest for Vasudev and Devaki, their family, and he was sent there. He was sent to by Vasudev to Nanda Maharaj to perform these rites, these ceremonies, and for Krishna. And so he's speaking here, and he's explaining that in the past. You know, he's being careful. He's trying to say in a sort of an indirect way, he's telling Nanda Maharaj, your son is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he's not just, you know, everything's being done very cautiously because they're trying to keep this all very much under wraps. They don't, you know, the ceremony is not being performed in a very gorgeous, pompous way. It's being performed in the cowshed. And even in the language is such that he's trying to, you know, very much not be too obvious about the whole thing, because they don't want Kamsa to find out. There's a fear there. Anyway, so he's Garga Muni is speaking, and he's making this point that in the past, in recorded history, this child, he protected the enemies. He protected people, protected Indra from his enemies, and protected people in general from thieves and rogues. And then he goes on to say in his next statement that just as the demons can't harm the demigods, so in the same way, people who are attached to this boy and are affectionate towards him, they can't be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa or the internal enemies of the senses. So, actually, he's pretty much almost directly saying he's letting Nanda Maharaj know that the same thing is happening again. Just as in the past, you know, this boy came. He came as Varaha and lifted the earth in the Garbhadak ocean. He came as Nrisingadev and he protected Prahlad Maharaj and practically the entire universe, who was being harassed by Hiranyakasipu. At that time also, Indra had been dethroned. He'd basically been, you know, his power had been usurped by Hiranyakasipu. He protected, as Lord Ramachandra, he protected the earth from Ravana, who is pretty much also, you know, conquered the universe and was making everybody's lives miserable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's so many different examples. And basically the same thing is happening here, you know, that Krishna's come and, you know, Kamsa's there. He's already taken over power from his father, Ugrasena, and he has all these different demon-like associates. We've heard a few of them already: Putana, Trinavarta, etc., etc. So, and there's more to come. So, he's making the point that anybody who becomes attached to, affectionate towards this boy Krishna, this child Krishna, he won't be able to be defeated by these demons. You know, the associates of Kamsa, Krishna will give them protection. So he, in his next verse, he makes it, says, you should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously for that reason. So So that's exactly what's happening here in this particular time with the birth of Krishna, because it's described elsewhere in the Mahabharata. It's described how in Treta Yuga, in this particular cycle of millenniums, the Treta Yuga and the Dwapara Yuga overlap. Usually it's Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, Kali Yuga. Actually, Dwo means two, Treta means three. But it's explained in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in this particular cycle, they overlap. So Treta comes before Dwapara. That's why Krishna comes towards the end of the Dwapara Yuga. So it's described in the Mahabharata that prior to Krishna's coming, going back, doesn't say give an exact amount of time, but the earth was enjoying prosperity and flourishing. Things were going really good. But simultaneously, in other parts of the universe, there was a struggle between the Indra, the demigods, and the Asuras, which is pretty much always going on. There's always like tension between those two camps, the Devas and the Asuras. Actually, they're from the same family, originally. They're both, all the Asuras are actually offspring or descendants from two of Kashyapa Muni's wives. One's name is Diti, and Diti is actually the mother of Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, and Danu. And they are a rebellious nature to the cosmic hierarchy. And so anyway, there's always that tension going on. And what happened was, at one point, this is going on in Svargaloka, the Asuras were defeated. They were defeated by the demigods. And so they decided that they had to have some place to kind of lord it over. So they figured out that they would take over the earth. And I'll just read you a little passage here from the Mahabharata, which describes this very nicely. Okay, so this is the sage Vaisampayana. Is that another name for Vyasadeva? Vaisampayana. Anyway, it's the sage Vaisampayana. He's addressing King Janamejaya. And he says, "O best of monarchs, just as humankind was flourishing, powerful and demoniac creatures began to take birth from the wives of earthly kings. Once the godly Adityas, who administer the universe, fought with their wicked cousins, the Daityas, and vanquished them. Bereft of their power and positions, the Daityas began to take birth on this planet, having carefully calculated that they could easily become the gods of the earth, bringing it under their demonic rule. And thus it happened, O Mighty One, that the Asuras began to appear among different creatures and communities." So that's what was going on. And they did that. Somehow or another, they had a way. They knew the technology or whatever. They knew how to do that, to take birth within the wombs. And there was no war or anything like that. They just took birth as the offspring of the rulers, and they became the next rulers. And then Kamsa is a perfect example of how it worked. He took birth as the son of Ugrasena, and then when the time was right, he just nudged him out of there. He just, got rid of Ugrasena and imprisoned him, and he became the ruler. So that was happening. That wasn't an isolated incident. That was the general way they operated. So they took over. And then it goes on to describe, says, "As these demonic creatures continued to take birth on the earth herself could not bear the weight of their presence. Having fallen from their positions in the higher planets, the sons of Diti and Danu thus appeared in this world as monarchs, endowed with great strength and in many other forms. They were bold and haughty, and they virtually surrounded the water-bounded earth, ready to crush those who would oppose them. They harassed the teachers, rulers, merchants, and workers of the earth, and all other creatures. Moving about by the hundreds and thousands, they began to slay the earth's creatures, and they brought terror to the world. Unconcerned with the godly culture of the Brahmins, they threatened the sages who sat peacefully in their forest ashrams, for the so-called kings were maddened by the strength of their bodies. So that was what was going on prior to Krishna's taking birth. And so that's a little background, you know, to the story. And what, how? So what happened? What was, you know, how did you know, the residents of the earth, or the guardians of the earth, respond to that? Well, that's the beginning of the Krishna book. That's the very first paragraph of the Krishna book. Prabhupada says, once the world was, well, this is, you know, the paraphrasing the Bhagavatam, once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of different kings. That's what we just heard about. We heard about where those kings came from. They were actually these demons from the, you know, Svarga Loka, who had been defeated by the demigods and now, you know, were taking, trying to take over the earth, who were actually demons but were posing themselves as the royal order. So that's like, this is a further insight into what this, you know, that's that sentence there. At that time, the whole world, at that time, the whole world became perturbed, and the predominating deity of this earth, known as Bhumi, went to see Lord Brahma to tell of her calamities due to the demoniac kings. Bhumi assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She related the calamitous position of the earth. And after hearing this, Lord Brahma became much aggrieved. And he at once started for the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu resides. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earthly planet by assuming the transcendental form of a boar. So apparently this is kind of like the way it works. You know, the demigods got together and they go to Lord Vishnu to get help. I don't know why Lord Brahma didn't just handle these things himself, but he's certainly powerful enough. You know, it's described how Lord Brahma is way more powerful than all the other demigods. You know, he's kind of like in a category all of his own, but I guess that's not his role. He doesn't get involved. Just like in that battle between Lord Krishna and Banasura. Lord Shiva took the side of Banasura along with his sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh. They were all fighting on, you know, on the side of Banasura, and Krishna was there with his sons and everything. They're fighting against him. And it's described there in the Krishna book that Lord Brahma and the other sages, they were there on the airplanes and they were observing. So Lord Brahma doesn't get involved. I guess, you know, that's not his role. He's more like a sage, or the great, you know, the great sage. And so in any event, they go to Lord Vishnu, and they did the same thing basically with Ravana, you know, to get rid of Ravana. And they asked, okay, please help us. We're, you know, in a really bad... And Lord Vishnu said, okay, yeah, I will. And his instruction was that I will. I'll come. I'll descend. And, you know, to you know, fix up this situation. And I want all the demigods, as you should take birth, to assist me in my mission. Or expand. You know, you send your expansions. Or, you know, make some arrangement to be there and assist me in my mission. So that's the Pandavas. You know, the Pandavas are part of that arrangement. And it's interesting, you know, this verse is talking about the enemies of Indra and Arjuna, who, you know, is one of the heroes of the Mahabharata. And he was actually the son of Indra with Kunti, you know, before she was married. And, yeah, so in this way, it's actually, this is... It's kind of like the war that are constantly going on between the demigods and the asuras in Svarga Loka. The whole thing was reenacted 5,000 years ago here on Earth during the time when Lord Krishna appeared. That was actually what was going on. And it came to a head with the Battle of Kurukshetra, which was, you know, when they were kind of like all assembled there. Although when you read the Krishna book, there's a lot of big battles all throughout the Krishna book where Krishna's wiping out all sorts of large numbers of asuras. But I think the Battle of Kurukshetra is certainly like right up there among them, if not the topmost. And I think there's one figure, if I'm remembering correctly, 640 million people were killed. The soldiers, they were Kshatriyas or assisting Kshatriyas, or within 18 days. That's a lot. That's a lot. So, you know, Krishna just kind of made that arrangement. You know, his mission was to deliver the pious, annihilate the miscreants. So he kind of arranged to, I'm going to annihilate them all at once. They all come together at this battle of Kurukshetra, and pretty much everybody, except for the Pandavas, and, you know, not a lot of people survived that battle. So, so that was a reenactment of this, you know, war that's always going on, struggle between the Devas and the Asuras. But in the process, something really good came of it. Aside from the annihilation of the miscreants, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And, so Krishna took it, you know, took this opportunity to also impart some important spiritual instruction to human society. He gave us the Bhagavad Gita. So here in the, today's verses, or verse, Garga Muni, he's instructing, you know, the cowherd men. He's telling them, in Saturday's verse, he explained to them, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace only you will surpass all difficulties. And he explains to them in the verse I read that didn't have a proper, he said, persons who are very much affectionate toward Krishna cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa, or by the internal enemies, the senses. And then coming up in tomorrow's verse, he explains to him, he's exactly like Narayan. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. So there's a bit of an analogy here. I mean, just like he's instructing them that, take care of this child. This is your protection. You see? So in the same way, we could take it that, because we know that Krishna is non-different from his name, Krishna is non-different from his deity form, Krishna is non-different from his instruction, Krishna is non-different from the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, you know, we could take an instruction here that in the same way, we should take care of this child, you know, take care of Krishna, you know, in the form of his name, in the form of his deity form, in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, take care very carefully. That's our protection. That's our protection. Just as in the same way that Garga Muni is instructing these, you know, the cowherd men, take care of this child. This is your protection. You know, if you take care of him, you don't have to worry about, you know, Kamsa or his demonic associates, or in parentheses it says, or the internal enemies, the senses. So in the same way, the same thing applies now. Krishna's present here. It's not like he's not here now. He's here in the form of his name. He's here in the form of the Bhagavad Gita. He's here in, you know, the form of this movement. Actually, Prabhupada said this Hare Krishna movement is an incarnation of Krishna. So, if we take care, that's our protection. Basically, I mean, on the whole, it just means adhering to the instructions of the spiritual master, not just one thing. I mean, it's a package, you know. So if we take care of our devotion, take care of what we've been given by Prabhupada, the mission, you know, which includes chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deities, distributing the Bhagavad Gita and all of the other books Prabhupada has given us. If we take care of the mission, that's our protection. We don't have to worry. We will be taken care of by Krishna. And as Garga Muni says here, persons who are very much affectionate towards Krishna, you know, who are very, you could paraphrase that, or, you know, who are very sincere and serious about trying to execute the instructions of the spiritual master, they can't be defeated. They can't be. There's a lot of demons. It's that they can't be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa. You know, one could argue that a similar situation exists on the earth today. There's a lot of demons, but previously, maybe smaller, but there's certainly a lot of them. Or the internal enemies of the senses. you know, our own, those enemies are there too. So if we're, you know, careful about taking care of what Prabhupada has given us, this you know, devotional service and this mission, then we're completely protected. So I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Boo-boo.
Thank you, Prabhuji. I didn't know the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, the devotees of Vishnu are the devas, devotees of Krishna, and the rest are asuras. They're not following the...
Yeah.
And that also extends, you know, it can also extend like, you know, those who are also sincere followers of God out there trying to stick to their scriptures, and provided it's bona fide, you know, their scriptures are bona fide and they're devoted. And then those who are not, like it says in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the asuras are defined as asuras or demons just because they don't follow they don't accept the authority of the scripture, you know, they don't follow it. So just wanted to comment, that's all.
Oh, it's a comment. It was a comment, you notice, because I didn't catch the question. Okay, so that was a comment. Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yeah. For Vas Prabhu, and then...
Hi, Prabhu. You know, it just reminded me when we read that purport about how the demons cannot affect the demigods and devotees. And it kind of reminded me, I heard a lecture where Srila Prabhupada was speaking to the devotees in a time of, like, Ted Patrick and deprogramming. And at that particular time, it had all the devotees, we were all alarmed by this activity because it was very...
frightening.
Yeah, very frightening, very traumatic. Anybody that went through it went through a very traumatic thing. I've heard that even today, that people that, besides devotees that were deprogrammed, they have like psychological problems even to this day after that particular event. But my point is that Prabhupada said that the demons cannot in any way affect the Krishna consciousness movement. It was a statement that Srila Prabhupada made. And when we heard it back then, it was just kind of like you didn't know what to think. Our faith wasn't really strong enough in order to really accept that. But now that just hearing this, it just reminded me of the event. And here's Krishna consciousness now, just expanding like anything. And how whatever Srila Prabhupada said, how those words rang so truly. They were so true. But if you can just, it's hard to, but if you can just imagine at that time how freaked out we were, right?
Yeah.
I mean, devotees were actually leaving the Krishna consciousness because they didn't want to get deprogrammed. They were afraid of it. At least in Denver, Colorado, where I was, there was a couple of devotees that left because they were threatened by their parents. And one person even came so far as one day he came to the temple and brought back all his books, the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, his dhotis, his kirta, his charter. He even folded everything very nicely up and gave it to me one day, and I didn't know what to think. So it's just amazing how the words of a pure devotee and the Supreme Lord are absolutely true. And to me, this is an example of that particular point.
So yeah, even Prabhupada was amazed. Just a quick instance, like in Bombay, Prabhupada, when Mr. Nair got that heart attack, and even more so when they had that court case against us in New York, and you know, they thought it was going to, Prabhupada thought it was going to drag on for a long time. That's why he told them, bring all the books, but it was over the same day, and Prabhupada was elated. He was delighted, you know, and how they, and he, you know, he gave the credit to Krishna. He says, just see how wonderful Krishna is. And just one day, Krishna, you know, got this case thrown out of the court like that. So, yeah.
There was that famous quote by Prabhupada going down the elevator in New York, Manhattan, where Srila Prabhupada came out and he said that, I want to fight, I'll fight these demons till my last breath. So. That is really the position of a devotee. You know, we do have to fight these kind of situations till our last breath. And because Krishna is on our side, we shouldn't be like freaked out. We should just simply execute our service.
We'll emerge victorious. That's the archetype.
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to go back to Nila Madhava's statement because it can be a little bit of a wet blanket on the preaching effort. Yes, we should see broadly. Obviously, devotee has to see that everybody is ultimately servant of Krishna, just in a fallen condition. But when you're dealing with people from other religious paths, you have to be ready to educate them. If you're thinking that they're okay just because they belong to some religion, then why are you approaching them to give them a book? You see? So Prabhupada made the point of showing them that they were wrong. You're not even Christians, because Christ says don't kill, you know, you would challenge them that you're not following properly. Don't pat yourself on the back that you're a devotee, a deva, just because you're following some religion. Prabhupada said, no, what do you know about God? Who is God? What do you know about Him?
Yeah, thank you.
You know, so we have to take that mood when we go out. That yes, on one level, yes, we accept everybody who's trying to approach God as being in at least the right category. But on the other hand, they need to be educated more. Who is God? Where does He live? What does He want from us?
I'll give you an example of that. I was too embarrassed. I didn't really understand what you were saying, but I was too embarrassed to ask you to repeat it. But thank you, Archita. Yeah, I'll give you an example of that. You have to be respectful, and at the same time, we have to educate people. Yesterday, I was up at the observatory with Jai Chaitanya, and this guy came up to me. He's a Christian kind of missionary guy. We've seen him a bunch of times. He looked like he was in his late 50s, early 60s, and you know, he's obviously pretty dedicated to doing that. So he came up and tried to hand me one of their, you know, tracks, I guess they call them. I said, no, I got it. You gave me that. You gave me that already. And he said, no, this is a new one. I said, but, you know, I know. It's just basically the same thing, you know. And he said, I said, look, I said, don't worry. I respect you. I respect what you're doing. I know why you're doing what you're doing. You know, you're doing what you're doing. You know, you're not getting paid for this. You're doing it, you know, voluntarily. And you're doing it because you're trying to get closer to God, and you're trying to help other people get closer to God. Right? He said, yeah. I said, well, that's why I'm doing this. You see, so I respect you, but I disagree with your ideas. And he said, what do you mean? And then I say, so, you know, I respected him. I told him I respected him, and I do respect him because I really believe that's his motivation. Right, but then I went on to point out to him that, look, you know, we don't agree with the way the Christian community relates to animals. I think if Jesus Christ were to come back today and you took him, you know, on a tour throughout America and showed him what all the slaughterhouses and things like that, I don't think he'd approve of that. You know, and he was silent. He said, well, you know, animals shouldn't be abused. I said, well, that's clearly abuse, right? I mean, he really couldn't, you know, say anything. And then I showed him the picture changing bodies, and I explained to him that, you know, look, it shows here how consciousness is irreducible. It continues even after the body's finished. It exists before the body began. It's not that when you die, you either go to heaven or hell. I said, that is incorrect. You know, he said, well, how do you, Bible says this. I said, I'm not going to, you know, and I mentioned about this. Well, there's scientific evidence to support this point. It's not a question of my scripture against yours. So like what Archita said, I respected him. As genuinely, as nicely as I could, I said, look, I know why you're doing what you're doing. You're a sincere person. You're trying to get closer to God. You're trying to help other people get closer to God. But, you know, I just don't think you got the right product there. And then, you know, and we have to politely, we have to politely explain to them why. And we have to be educated enough ourselves to be able to give them specific examples. And I felt it was effective because, you know, he listened. He listened. And he didn't kind of like get all agitated. And he just, you know, he understood I was making some sense. So, you know, it was good. So, yeah, so Radha Krishna, and then we'll end.
You mentioned something that I had not heard, and this was interesting, about Dwarpa Yuga and Treta Yuga being overlapped or reversed.
Reverse. I think the Bhagavatam uses the word overlap, but yeah, reverse.
Yeah, can you expand on it? What?
Can I explain about that?
Can you expand? No. Okay.
I cannot. And I've asked people about it, and I've never...
So it's part of Krishna's pastime that when he appears, this thing happens?
Prabhupada doesn't give an explanation in the purport in the Bhagavatam. He just states that it did happen, but he doesn't explain to the best of my knowledge. Archita? Yeah. I've never got an explanation. I've never heard an explanation for that. So sorry about that. Grantarach Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
They're so glad to have you told me.